All right, my name is George Christensen. Let's see, I'm 75 years old this year. So, I have never been convicted of any crimes. So as far as getting some juicy stuff like that, you're not getting nothing.
Okay. Well, maybe you can
dish convicted.
Maybe you can dish some dirt on your sibling. So,
all right. Why don't you give me some questions then, Mr.
The first
Baker.
Question I have is, what kind of student were you in high school? Were you a jock? Were you a nerd? Were you a straight A student?
Perfect nerd.
Perfect nerd, huh?
Perfect nerd, yep.
What did you do in high school? What were your activities in high school?
I went to school every day. I attended class. I did the absolute best I could do, which normally resulted in B's and C's. My mother told me what I was going to be when I grew up, so then I had to take those kind of courses. And we argued a lot because I kept telling her I wanted to be a carpenter, and she said, you're not going to be a carpenter, you're going to be an engineer, which meant then I had to take entirely different curriculum, which I hated. The reason for hating it is that I have really bad ADD, ADHD, whatever it's called, and I couldn't focus on nothing in high school. So,
were you diagnosed ADHD?
They didn't even know what that was back then.
But,
they,
I mean, that's what you had.
They called me.
They didn't have the right name.
That's right. That's right. They said I had ants in my pants and stuff.
What was your favorite subject?
Any math. Any math course was my favorite. Anything that had to do with history, I mean, excuse me, English, I disliked. I took any shop class I could, except that didn't meet my mom's criteria, so I normally had to not take that many. And I was a geek because I loved cars, studied them. That was the years in the 60s when Detroit was going crazy with big black cars, and I loved to race.
That's so funny.
So that was my pastime.
Did you play sports in high school?
I only swam. I went out for the baseball team, and they rejected me, which I almost didn't recover from. Rejection is really hard, as you guys know. And so I turned all my energy to trying out for the soccer team, and they rejected me. So then I just focused on swimming, which is good because all you have to do is swim. And it's not really a team sport. It's an individual sport. And what else did I do? And I race cars. And then I fix cars. And some of the girls like that. So I had a few girlfriends. And which resulted in getting more unfocused. When my senior year rolled around, and that's when my dad said, where are you going to college? And I said, really hadn't thought about that. He said, well, it's probably about time you start thinking about it. And then I ended up being accepted by Oregon State, because in those days, what you did is you went to the doctor. If you had a pulse, then you got to go in. And as you guys know, when you go to college, in the first two quarters, you got to make it or you break it, and you're out. And, of course, that was in 1966. Vietnam was really starting to rage. And the draft board let me know very clearly that the minute you're not making grades in college, that my butt was their butt. And so I don't know why, but that got me refocused.
Not going to war was a good refocus.
And yeah, I had all the motivation in the world, Scott.
That sounds like good motivation to me.
Every bit. So anyway, we clicked along until I got out of college and interviewed a few companies, and I got three offers. The one I wanted the most is the one that would not get me a draft deferment. That was working for a truck manufacturing company in downtown Portland.
Oh, so the employers had the ability to give you a draft deferment at
if
the time?
If the government gave them a draft deferment to give to me to do something that they needed for the war effort. So that's how I ended up.
Oh, I see.
So I ended up going to work for Mobil because Mobil gave the refinery that I actually went to work at got a deferment that they gave to me to build a pipeline to move, which I didn't know then. I knew we were moving a product. What I didn't realize, it was a special new Air Force product for doing high-altitude bombing in Cambodia. And it was called JP-5. And I had to put the facility in to move the product, believe it or not, from our little town to Portland, Oregon. And then it got put on ships and sent over to Vietnam.
When did you find out they were using it for high-altitude bombing?
About 30 years later.
Would you have had a problem with that at the time?
No.
No?
No. No, because, you know, it was just part of the war effort, you know, whatever it took.
Okay.
Anyway, JP-5 is used in all the jets today.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
It's kind of the standard for the Air Force. Anyway, now I'm 21 years old. I'm in Bellingham, Washington, Ferndale, Washington area, which is away from home. My girlfriend dumps me. So I go on the prowl. And I find this gal at a local bar.
Uh-huh.
Best looking gal in Bellingham is not married.
Uh-huh.
So she asked me to marry her, and the rest is history.
So I think this is funny because I have 10 questions down here. We've asked George one, but I think he's answered four of them already. So let's get back to the list, but we've already hit some of these, which is funny. Okay, so this we did not. Okay, so what was the most trouble you got into as a kid? Do you remember your parents, like, cracking down on you for taking the car, not doing your homework, or failing classes, or...
Scott, where do you want me to start? When I'm six?
We got all day, George.
Okay. Well, let's just wrap it like this. Yes, I did get in a lot of trouble, but it was more because I'm a very curious person.
Okay.
So I experiment a lot.
I got a kid like that. I feel you. Yeah.
So, you know, building bombs, stuff like that would sometimes not work out so well.
Your parents didn't like you building bombs? No. Oh, that seems odd.
Yeah. And when I was 6 years old, I built a boat. Well, I called it a boat. And you have to understand, my dad did not do things with his hands. So there wasn't a lot of tools at our house, but we did have a hammer, we had a saw, and a couple nails. So I made a boat, and I got all my new buddies in the neighborhood to come over, and we lifted the boat. It was probably about 5 foot long, 1 foot wide, 1 foot deep. And we walked down to the river, and we launched the boat with me in it. And it sank, and I couldn't swim. And thank God there was a fisherman in a boat there that saved me, and he drug my butt back to my parents' house. And whew, I got in big trouble.
Yeah?
Yep. So that, you said, in trouble, right? That's one example.
Yeah, just a story, sure. Is there a time that stands out to you? You have four kids. Is there a time that stands out, or more than one, I suppose, that stands out that your kids got in really big trouble that you think is a story worth repeating?
Nah, my kids were like golden. They never did anything.
Oh, come on. Mark said that same thing. He wouldn't give me any dirt on any of his kids. They never, come on. James never took your car or nothing?
No, they were just golden.
They
were like, I was lucky. I just had good kids.
Sleep or share.
I was going to say, we'll have to get,
You can come back to that with a different kind of a question.
Okay.
Do you see yourself and your kids?
Do I see myself and my kids? Not all of them.
I will say, I think it was Sarah's wedding was the first time I ever met James and Aaron, because I'd met you several times. Like you know, you had come out, and I remember meeting James and Aaron and just thinking, there's absolutely no way these are George's kids. They are so wild. George is so dialed. Like the first time I think I ever met James, he was wrestling with you. Yeah, you were. I do remember that because you and Andrew were upstairs in the loft at Sarah's wedding. And all I just kept hearing is crash, bang, and, like, you and Andrew are yelling. And like, yeah, because James is just throwing you guys around. I'm like, who is this guy? He's like an uncaged animal. There's no way he's related to George. All right, so.
He's really not. He's related to Sherry.
Oh, he's got a big difference.
You know?
Oh, okay. What was your favorite memory of your parents? Did they have traditions? Did they have favorite meals that they cooked? Is there something that stands out?
I mean, that was pretty clear. It was pretty clear. My parents trusted me and let me do whatever I wanted with a very limited rule base that I had to follow. As long as I didn't break the rules, I got to do whatever I wanted.
And you never broke the rules, and you were never in trouble.
Well, I didn't say that, but...
You did say that, though.
Well, kind of. Sometimes you did, you know.
I see.
I think he stretched these rules into a pretzel.
Was there a favorite family vacation that you guys took?
We didn't do vacations.
You were mentioning the one to Italy.
Oh, they did. One time I went to Italy because we were a big family. Lots of times we didn't have a lot of money, so we didn't do like annual vacations. But we did go to Italy in 1958, and that was because my grandmother treated us and took us there, which was a big deal. And we went on a TWA TriStar piston plane, flew from New York City to Greenland, fueled up, flew to Iceland, fueled up, flew to London, fueled up, landed in Paris, fueled up, and then got to our final destination, which was Rome, Italy. And it was myself, my parents, my grandmother, Julie, and Anne, who was a baby. Meryl and John were left to stay with my aunt and uncle in Connecticut.
So how old were you when you were in Italy?
It was 1958. I was born in 47, 11 years old.
You have a good memory.
Yeah, I remember when I was born, 1947.
That's good. I can barely tell you when my kids were born, let alone when I took vacations 40 years.
Well, so, it was a big deal, though, Scott.
Yeah, no, I'm sure it was.
That was a big deal.
That's a lot of people to take to a foreign country. Did you speak? So, Julie mentioned that your grandma lived with you and that she taught Julie Italian. Did your grandmother teach you Italian?
She taught both of us Italian, and Julie learned it, and I didn't.
Julie said that grandma taught all the kids Italian, but Julie was the only one that learned.
And that's correct.
Okay.
So when you understand it?
Yeah, when you got
I could understand it.
So when you got to Italy, you could understand people talking.
Absolutely. That's a good point, Scott. I could.
So
when they're talking, I could tell what they were talking about.
Yeah.
But I couldn't talk back to them.
Did you know your mom was pregnant when you were in Italy?
With Mark?
Yeah.
I'd have killed her if I knew that.
Because Julie said
No, we didn't know.
Julie said she didn't know, and she kept telling people, because people in Italy would ask her how many kids you have, and she would say five and one on the way.
Right.
And Julie didn't know what that meant, and she got back here, and then she went, wait a minute, mom's pregnant. She was pregnant the whole time, and I had no idea.
See, I didn't even know it. I didn't know what that meant, pregnant. I wasn't into that kind of stuff, you know, that sex and stuff. Not at 11 years old.
That was much later.
You weren't in high school.
11 years old. I mean, I wasn't. Come on, guys. You could think about that, too.
So how long were you in Italy? How long was that vacation?
Boy, I'm going to guess 4 weeks.
Was it a good vacation?
It was really good. It was good. And it was culturally pretty important to me because I only knew my dad's side of the family. And they were not the nicest people.
Mm-hmm.
And I always used to describe them as pretty cold. So I get to Italy, and I got these aunts and extended family over there, and they were treating me like, because I was the oldest son, so I was close to... In Italy, when you're the oldest son, you're close to Jesus. It's almost the same.
You're so full of shit.
You know what I like about George is just how modest he is. He just doesn't let things go to his head.
Well, they were telling me that, Scott. I mean, I had to believe it, right?
Well, hey.
So they were hugging me and everything, yeah, right? So I had this... So it was Nana Julia, who's my grandmother, my mother's mother, was all her sisters, because she only had sisters. And none of them had kids. So their kid was my mom, which made me their grandson, as far as they were concerned.
Yeah.
And Julie, their granddaughter. So anyway, they doted over me, and I just loved it.
Just ate it up? What 11-year-old?
They used to put breadsticks. I didn't know what a breadstick was. They would bring out tons of breadsticks, and I'd just eat them like going out of style, and they'd come out and say, do you need more? Do you want more? And I'd go, yeah, and I just kept eating these breadsticks. Pretty cool.
Where in Italy were you at the
towns,
castle?
We went to Rome, Genoa, Florence, Naples, Pompeii, Pisa.
Oh, wow.
It was a pretty good trip. Pretty good trip. Saw a lot of good stuff.
Were you, as an 11-year-old, were you able to appreciate it, or were you just like...
Some things I did. Julia probably appreciated it more than I did, but I was more interested in the
breadsticks,
planes and the cars and the trains that took us to places, because it was so different. Over there, you know, in the United States, you're used to a car, and you go to places in a car. Well, over there, it's all mass transit, and it was all run-down stuff from World War II. And it barely ran. I remember one time we jumped on a train to go to Naples, and it was one of these trains that stopped at each little town, and you could get on the train with your goats and the
pig. Wow,
and so you got everybody's on the train. This guy comes out with his goats, and this goat's sitting next to me, and I'm going, I'm not quite sure where I'm at.
So you mentioned there are like five stops along the way there.
Tons, yeah.
How long did it take to fly there?
When we went there?
Mm.
It was a pretty long trip. I don't remember the hours, Alex, except that we would fly, then we dropped. I think those planes went about half the speed of today's plane. So if it takes 10 hours to get to Rome, we probably were flying for 20, but we had to stop and fuel up all the time.
Was that the first time you were flown on a plane?
Oh, that was the first time last time for a long time because it cost so much. If my grandmother wouldn't have paid for it, we wouldn't have been able to go. Yeah, it was that expensive.
I bet those planes were terrifying, too.
They were. Not loud, noisy, and lots of fire at night. And you flew at night, mostly.
What do you mean lots of fire at night?
They're internal combustion engines with the exhaust going straight out. So there's just this long tail of fire coming out of those engines.
Like looking out the window, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You said, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So you had a big family. You've got five brothers and sisters.
Correct.
So you meet the love of your life at this bar.
Yep.
It's fall in love, and you decide to start a family.
No, I told you she fell in love.
Oh.
With me, and asked me to marry her.
But it wasn't reciprocal?
Not at first.
Okay.
No. Now, if you interview her, she's going to tell the story the opposite. But I just want you to know... You know, for this podcast.
For the record.
But because you told me that, you know, we're on the record here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. This is right. So you had five brothers and sisters. So you decide, you and Sherry decide that you're going to have kids. Does the fact that you have five brothers and sisters factor into your decision to have kids? Did you want to have a lot of kids like Franca did, or did you want to have no kids because you had too many brothers and sisters and it was overwhelming?
Well, to be honest, now this is pretty personal. Now I'm not sure I can even tell.
You tell whatever you're comfortable with.
Yeah,
you don't have.
So we wanted kids,
right? That's all.
Well, Sherry and I were kind of naive. We didn't understand where kids come from.
I see.
And the stork kept dropping these kids off.
I see.
Finally, we went to a class
after the first couple kids. I don't think you're doing you're helping yourself out. Right now, all your brothers and sisters are listening to this podcast going, what is wrong with George? Did you set out to
We figured it out.
Did you set out to have four kids or two?
We set out to have James.
So you had James and then three surprises?
And then Amy came along and then Aaron came along. And if we would have known Aaron just a little bit longer, there wouldn't have been a kid.
I see.
Yeah.
My grandma had nine kids, and I asked her, I said, did you and Grandpa decide to have nine kids? Like, you know, how does that conversation go? She said, we were a good Catholic family. We just kept going until it stopped working. And I was like, wow, okay. Hey, whatever it takes, right?
That's right.
So I just know, because, like, before, when Angie and I got married, we sat down and we had a discussion, because she has one sibling and I have one sibling. I said, do you want to have one kid? Do you want to have two kids? Do you want to have... And we both kind of agreed... We're like, we don't want to have an only child, because we both knew a couple only children, and we're like, you know what, I want my kid to have somebody to play with.
Right, that's right.
So we decided to have two, and then, you know, we had two boys, and we really wanted to have a girl, and we debated whether or not we were going to go for a third one, and we were terrified we're going to get three boys, right? And I'm like, you know what, it's not worth the risk.
Well, see, we never had those conversations.
Yeah.
God, like
it did. just worked out
the way
it did.
Just let her roll.
Sure.
Let her roll.
All right. So.
Okay.
Who is your parents' favorite child?
Oh, that's easy.
Everyone has said the exact same thing. That was easy, and then they gave me a name. I'm curious what name.
I would think they all gave you the same name.
Well, what's the
me?
Answer? Were you the favorite child?
Absolutely.
Okay, no question?
No, there's no question about it. You just need to ask my brothers and sisters. They'll tell you that.
They've all said the exact same thing, so I'm curious. Everyone has said,
it's not because,
it's George, no question.
It's not because, it was just because that's what they think.
I see. But yeah. You said, but you agree with them.
No, you said who was theirs and all like, oh, you mean who really was theirs?
Mm. Sure.
They didn't have one.
Okay.
They didn't have one.
All right. Nah.
But my brothers and sisters all think they did.
That it's you?
Yes. And how that could possibly be, I have no clue.
You know, it's funny because everybody said the same thing. And I said, well, why is George the favorite? And they always say, well, because he was the first one. And I said, well, that doesn't, you know, I mean, I've got kids. Like, it's not automatic the first. Well, because Alex said Andrew's the favorite. And I said, well, he was not the first one. So there's got to be more to it, right? Okay.
Well, I was very... I would never say I was my dad's favorite. Mm. I wouldn't. I might have been my mother's, though. Only because my mom and I were like...
Yeah.
Because we thought the same. We did things the same. She's a builder, a maker, a problem solver. Those are things that I like to do. And so we work together on a lot of stuff. The other thing is that I told you she gave me a lot of freedom, but the rule was you never lie to me. So we kept that going, and we never had problems.
I'm curious. You're legitimately one of the most handy guys I know. Like, I will call you, like, cross-country if something breaks at my house every now and then. So I'm curious, because you said your dad was not handy. He did not have a lot of tools. So where did that skill set come from?
My grandfather.
So you learned from your grandfather.
I didn't learn from my... He died when I was five, but I must have gotten... He was known to be a heck of a mechanic, and he was a gunsmith by trade. I would imagine that I probably got...
So you think you're just naturally curious and self-taught yourself a lot of that?
Well, that's... why I got in trouble a lot, because I am very curious.
Right.
So I tend to experiment a lot, which often leads down a path you probably don't want to go twice.
I've got a kid just like that. I mean, he takes apart stuff and desolders stuff. And yeah, he's great.
I like Roland, because Roland's got a little of that trait.
He's got a little Uncle George in him.
Except he doesn't have the same deal with his father that I had with my mother, which is, it's okay, go do it. Take my lawnmower apart. It's cool.
The lawnmower, he's taken a lot of my stuff apart. Don't you worry.
Was this grandpa on your dad's side?
Yeah.
Grandpa's side?
Yeah. Grandpa George. I was named after him.
So I think we already talked about this, but I want the whole story. So where did you meet your significant other? And how does that...
Actually, mean? I didn't tell you the whole story, but I moved into an apartment complex in Bellingham, Washington, when I went up there to go to work. And... I just got in there, and we were on the second floor, and we had a balcony, and I'm looking down, and this gorgeous blonde is walking down the middle path between the apartments, and I had never seen her before, so I came up with an excuse to head down to that path, because that path led to the laundromat, so I grabbed some clothes, and I went down there, and I bumped into her, and I said, are you new around here? And she said, yeah, I just moved in. I said, oh. I said, where are you coming from? She said, I'm just going through a divorce. So I was deflated. And
how old are you at this time?
21, 22.
Okay.
And so her name was Jeannie Anderson. And I'm talking to her. And so we talk down, go down to the laundromat, we're talking. And I said, man, I just got into town. And I just need to, you know, any like really nice... gals are, oh, I got this gal I work with, she says. You and her would get along really peachy. She said, let me see if I can set up a date for you. I said, oh, that'd be great. So that's when I met Sherry at the bar.
So Sherry's friend introduced you.
Yeah.
So your first date was in a bar.
Right.
And...
kind of went okay.
Okay, yeah.
Name of the bar was the Iron Bull.
Uh-huh.
Hard metal... type music going. You couldn't hardly talk, you know, with all the noise. So we had to have a second date so we could just talk to each other, you know. So I invited her to go for... At that time, I had an off-road motorcycle. And this gal's all dressed to the hilt, right? So I said, well, I got to test her. Now, if she'll go on the off-road motorcycle with me.
This is the second date. So the
second date.
The second date, and the first thing you can think of is I need to test this girl?
Right.
Oh, okay, good strategy. All right.
It worked.
Listen, if she's all dialed up and that's all she's going to do, Scott, I'm not, you know.
Hey, I'm not
you
judging.
Think she's going to jump under the hood with me and work? No. So anyway, turns out she works at a beauty shop.
Right.
You know, and she's into all the dressing nice and all that. So anyway, she agreed to go on the motorcycle with me. I'll let her tell you about that date. It didn't go too good. And but she was game. Right?
Okay.
So then there was a third date. Forget what we did. Whatever it was, it worked out pretty good. And then on the fourth date, I asked her back to my apartment. And it was around December of 1970. We got married in 71, so it was December. And there was all these Christmas cards on my counter that people had sent me.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was from a gal who had a very unique name that Sherry picked up on. She says to me, "Oh, I see you got a Christmas card from Babs." And I said, "Oh, yeah. We went on a date one time." "Oh, so she sent you a Christmas card?" I said, "Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, Sherry doesn't tell me. But Sherry's also dating Babs' ex-husband."
Oh, wow.
So Sherry's going, "Wait a minute. She didn't tell me that, though. But she registers it, right?"
Mm-hmm.
So then she doesn't answer my calls anymore for a while. I don't hear from her. And so I knew where she lived, so I tracked her down. And somehow we got fired back up again. When she told me that we probably shouldn't get in any kind of a relationship, she's leaving town. She's going to Hawaii to live as an airline stewardess. Well, that got me off my... up until now, I'm just kind of laid back, right? I'm going, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Now it's a challenge.
Because it's a challenge.
Yeah.
And she's worth going after at this point for me.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we made a deal where if she comes back from Hawaii and it doesn't work out, that she'd give me a call and we'd start dating again. Which, she went to Hawaii for a month with another couple of gals, and they were going to establish camp over there and everything. And I think Sherry got rejected by the airlines because she was 5 foot 2.5. In those days, you had to be 5 foot 3 be a stewardess, except they didn't call them that back then.
Yeah.
Flight attendant, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
Stewardess, but not flight attendant.
Yeah.
Right? So anyway, she comes home, calls me up. This is in February, and we got married in May.
Things moved
and that's the way it went.
How long after you guys got married did you have James?
I think it was James was born in 74. 3 years.
Okay. So you said earlier that you wanted to be a carpenter, but your parents weren't into that. They wanted you to be an engineer.
Absolutely.
So talk to me a little bit about your college experience. How does that go? You get out of high school and you decide to go to an engineering college to please your parents?
Yeah, kind of. Remember, Vietnam's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So college is probably a pretty good alternative. And frankly, college suited me really good. High school didn't suit me. But college really suited me. And so I kind of buckled down. Fortunately for me, my roommate was a chemical engineer, played basketball for Oregon State, and we became really good friends, not because I play basketball, but he was a super, super, super quiet guy. And so he kind of liked running with me because when we went to parties and stuff, I was less quiet than him. And so we became really good buddies, and he was an incredible student. And he taught me lots of stuff about how to survive in college. And he's still a good friend of mine today. His name's Perry Jorgensen. And
what college did you go to? I guess we should
Oregon
have
State.
Started with that.
Yep, yeah, Oregon State. All of
them. That's what I thought. I was just making sure.
There is only really one college.
Okay.
Okay. Oregon State. In Oregon. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so Perry taught me how to buckle down, taught me how to study, and laid some pretty strict rules on me. which is the only thing that I respond to, so it worked. Which meant every day when you came home from your classes, whatever you had for homework got done before dinner. And then on the weekends, you could screw up for one day, and the other day you studied.
So were, did you say you were a better student in college than you were in high school?
Absolutely. I got a higher GPA, too.
Because of your friend?
Yep.
So you so if you hadn't met your friend, you don't think you would have been as successful in college?
I might not have made it.
Yeah?
No, I would have made it, but I wouldn't have made it in engineering.
Okay.
Because it was too rigorous. I was drifting towards going into business instead, and he pulled me back with my counselor, who absolutely didn't want to lose me.
So you graduated in after 4 years with an engineering degree?
I did, in 4 years.
Excellent. And then petroleum business right after that?
Then that's when I got that offer,
yep.
which had the deferment attached to it. And so I left town and went from Portland up to north of Seattle, a little town called Ferndale, Washington, and started with Mobil.
I mean, you did petroleum for years, right? I mean, you retired from the petroleum business, right?
Correct.
But you didn't work for Mobil the entire time?
No, because only because the refinery that... I was in the Mobil refining division,
uh-huh.
and I moved all over the country working at their refineries. Well, the last refinery I worked at got sold to a company called Valero Energy out of Texas, and so then I finished my career with Valero Energy.
And how old were you when you retired? Did you retire at 65 or early?
56.
That's a really good deal. Good for you.
Yeah, I got lucky.
Yeah?
Yep. Yeah, there's a term called stock options that work sometimes, and they work.
Right. So. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing you can do about that. You get lucky, or
you
don't.
Get lucky. Yeah.
See, sometimes you get a good job, and sometimes you don't. Right.
Which means instead of I would have had to work to 65, but this worked out.
Yeah. Yeah. For
of course,
sure.
You have to earn those. I mean, you have to make something work.
So this is kind of a two-part question. The question is, what was the worst thing you ever did to one of your siblings, and was it when you broke Mark's neck putting him on the bike?
I would say that was the worst. Yes.
So tell me, I mean, I only heard that part of that story from Mark. So he was really young. He was 3.
Yep.
And you put him on the handlebars of your bike?
He was a big boy, big 3. And
that makes it okay.
Because he seemed older than he was.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So we were getting ready to move to Portland, Oregon from Fremont, which was a big deal. We're staying, the house is sold. We don't have it anymore. No, the house isn't sold, but we're out of the house. And we moved in with... you know Aunt Nancy that's here, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, we moved into her house. Our whole family moved in with them for a couple days. And so that was, what, 6? So we had about 17 people in the house, and it was crowded. Lots of kids. So Mom says, George, take Mark. Go keep him busy.
Oh, no.
So I went out in the garage of my uncle's, and I found a bike that I wasn't used to riding. And Mark is following me. I'm, what, 15? He's, like, 3. And I told him I'm going out on the bike and for him just to sit on the front porch and watch me ride around. He goes, I want to go. Okay. So I put him up on the handlebars, which was not smart.
Is there a basket or something? Or no?
Just the handlebars. So he had him facing me.
So, like, his knees are hanging over the handlebars?
Yeah, facing me.
Yeah,
he's
okay.
Looking at me.
Uh-huh.
Right? I said, hold on tight. Right, and they were riding around, and I don't really know what happened, but next thing I know, he's off the bike, over the front. I run over him.
So the tires actually ran over.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And he's laying there unconscious.
Oh wow!
So I pick him up, run him home, and he's got a concussion.
And so you knocked him out.
We knocked him out, and then Mom calls Dr. Newman, who is our family GP. He comes to the house in his Cadillac.
Wow.
I'll never forget it.
Yeah.
And Mark's in there, you know, kind of dazed. Dr. Newman looks him all over. I was pretty scared. I was really scared.
Yeah.
I was praying. I told God that if he lived and was okay, straight from there, man, never going to have a can of beer, nothing. So anyway, God answered my prayers. Mark, the next day, his concussion was okay. So let's now fast forward about 45 years later. Mark calls me one day. George, I just got back from the doctor. I had an MRI. And the doctor asked me when I had my neck was broken. I told him I never broke my neck. Now, Mark has no clue about this story. He's never heard it because I didn't want to tell him.
Oh, because he was too young, he wouldn't remember. Right.
And I didn't want to tell him. And so I kind of went quiet on the other end, and I'm thinking, shit, do I tell him? So I did. I told him. And then he went quiet on the other end. So that was not a good thing. That's probably the worst thing that ever happened. As far as my sisters are concerned, I would hope they would say I was a pretty good brother. We never fought. We played a lot of board games and stuff. But now John is probably a different story that he might tell you about our relationship. John was into trouble a lot.
See, I had no idea.
And he was assigned. Unfortunately, my mother had so many kids, she assigned John to me. And Jesus, he couldn't. That guy just did what he wanted, and you couldn't. Plus, it was never logical what he was doing to me. You know, he was doing. He ever tell you about when he chopped down Dad's tree, pine tree?
No.
Dad had this gorgeous tree in the backyard. And John decided he's going to fire arrows into the tree. Now, he's a little older at this point. And the bark starts to fall off the tree. And he keeps doing it. And finally, the tree dies. And, of course, all the bark's off, and there's all these holes in it, right? So anyway, the bottom line is Dad yelled at him a little bit, and then it cost Dad like $300 to have this tree brought down because it's in the backyard of a residential neighborhood. And John never could figure out what he did wrong to get yelled at. He didn't understand it.
Hmm.
That's just one example.
I had no idea. I've been married to his daughter for 17 years. I had no idea about any of these stories. The thread that I'm taking away from a lot of these interviews is that John was a major troublemaker. So we'll have to ask him when we get to him. I don't know if he's going to want to talk to me after this.
He might want to tell you about his behavior in church. I'll let him tell you that.
Okay.
If you want to put a little note down.
All right. Well, so yeah, that was going to be... So that's it. That's the last official question. So is there any stories you want to tell or any question I should have asked that I didn't that you want to get on the record?
No, except that these reunions are cool.
Yeah, it's a really good time. I mean,
we all get to meet. We live all over the United States, and we get to meet each other.
We don't all get to talk to each other. I'm hoping maybe this will illuminate some things. So my last question was, who has an interesting story, and what should I ask them? But you gave me several things to ask about John. Is there anything else about any of your other siblings I should ask?
Yeah, let me think real quick. Julie, no. Meryl. No.
Did you pick on Meryl?
Well, she'll probably say I did.
Mark told me that everybody picked on Meryl. John picked on Meryl a lot.
Meryl made herself an easy target. We'll just say that.
And apparently a lot of the siblings just like to pick on Meryl just to make her cry.
I don't think that's the way it went, but Meryl would kind of set up a situation that then would end up making her cry. Okay. And we would be part of that situation.
Okay. All right, well, that's all I have. I appreciate you taking the time. Is there anything else you want to tell us?
I think you and Alex are doing a great job on this podcast, and I hope it's super successful and that you guys make a lot of money with it.
That's clearly my goal with this, is just to make as much money as possible.
Okay, well, good.
I'm assuming by this time next year I'll be a multimillionaire just from this.
I got a question.
I'll send you a residual check.
How'd you do in your races?
In the what?
In your races.
There was a period in there, Alex, when the 440 was king.
Yeah.
I won them all.
Yeah.
And then along came the next engine that somebody came out with, which was probably a Chevy, I don't know. But there was a period in there. We did good. Yeah. All right, well, Scott, I'm going to have to end this because...
Absolutely. It's almost dinner time, right?
No, I got to go play some...
You going to play some chess with this guy?
I think we got 4 minutes left before dinner, and I can get it in.
Good deal.
Yep.
Make sure you put a lot of money on it, too, George.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, buddy.